As of this week, there are about 400 inmates in the Madison County Detention Center in Richmond. In fact, yesterday, Wednesday, there were 398 by my count. It's a facility built to house fewer than half that number, and chances are most of those inmates are there because of drug-related crimes. During this week's show, we'll discuss jail and prison overcrowding and the options for reducing the inmate population. We are interested in your questions, comments, or personal stories on this topic at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at 889WEKU. You can post on the WEKU website or the Facebook page. And in a little while, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, our topic this week, jail overcrowding and the drug crisis, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. This week, another topic of what I think is wide interest and of serious concern in our communities in Kentucky, the issue of jail overcrowding and the relationship to the drug crisis. We see that there is apparently a correlation between the two, and we have guests with us today who will help us discuss this topic, for which I'm told there are no immediate answers. And we're interested in hearing from you, our listeners, with your responses, your questions, your comments, and your personal stories. Perhaps you've had some experience with jail, either through yourself or someone in the family. Perhaps you've experienced issues with drug problems. We're interested in hearing from you throughout the program. We're going to open the phone lines in just a little while, but we will tell you you can send us an email right now, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at 889WEKU. And again, we'll open the phones in just a few minutes. I want to welcome guests to the studio, and we have one guest on the phone line as well, and another guest who will be coming in to join us shortly. But first up, I want to mention or welcome Doug Thomas, who is Madison County jailer. Doug is in his second term in that elected position as jailer. You've been in that position since 2011?
I have.
And been in corrections as a career prior to that.
Since 1986.
How did that happen? Where did you go to school for that field?
Did not go to school. Back in 1986, our jailer was Nolan Winkler at that time, and just put in that I was interested in a job, mm-hmm. and got hired.
And again, had made that a career in working with people who are incarcerated in our communities. We're going to come back to Doug Thomas in a few moments, because Doug's at the core of this issue. Even in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, a lot of folks are looking to Madison County and how Madison County is going to resolve its jail overcrowding issue. And also, because of the Madison County connection, we have with us Representative Wesley Morgan of House District 81, Republican, sworn into office in January of this year, your first time in elected office.
Yeah, it is. That's correct.
And as I understand it, you're one of the legislators in the Commonwealth who is likewise seeking answers for this problem of jail overcrowding.
That's correct. I don't believe there is a good answer for it at this point, but other than just discussion and trying to figure out what we should do.
Let's turn also just to introduce Stephanie Raglan. And Stephanie is Recovery Program for Women Assistant at the Hope Center and Director of Programs at the Fayette County Detention Center, of course, in Lexington. Stephanie, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
We want to come back to you in a few minutes again to talk about what's being done in terms of recovery for those with drug and alcohol problems. But first, let's talk with Doug Thomas about the nature of the problem. It seems to be everywhere. We know that in Madison County, we've got a fairly nice-looking detention center in the middle of downtown Richmond, but it's overcrowded. Tell me about that situation.
It is overcrowded. We are a 184-bed facility, and we have around 420 to 25 people that are there now. I have probably about 25 or 30 in other counties that are holding for us. I think as we speak today, we got 390 or 95, something like that, in there right now.
I went onto your website yesterday, and the count looked like it was 398, but again, that may not have been updated.
Yeah, it could drop. We could release 10 today and get 20 tonight.
I mean, how do you do that? You've got a place built for 184, and you got over twice that many in there right now.
It's tough.
You have extra cots? I mean, you bring in extra beds? What's the story?
All we have is a mat.
Okay.
That we will give you, and you put it on the floor. And, I mean, I got over 200 people on the floor, sleeping on the floor.
And what, two people sharing cells that were designed for one, or how does that work?
You have a classification system, Jack, that you have to go by, which the classification system that we have is for a 184-bed facility. Classification is pretty much out the window because I can't classify like I need to, like I'm supposed to with the overcrowding issues that we have. Classification don't work.
I assume that creates all kinds of other problems in your facility in terms of behavioral issues, stress, undue stress for persons who are incarcerated for whatever reason. And I'm sure that's stress for your, 35 staff or so?
It's stressful for everybody. The inmates that are there, the officers that work for me. For me, myself, it's very stressful. It's a stressful enough job as it is, but it makes it so much more stressful. Like you said, we have more altercation, more fighting amongst the inmates. Our staff, we're 400 people plus, and I have a staff of maybe 40 officers, and about six per shift, six or seven officers per shift, and I run 12-hour shifts. It makes it a lot more stressful.
Tell me about life in your detention center. Are people, locked up in secure cells all day? Are they free to move around at certain periods of time? We've seen the movies, we've seen the TV shows, and right. I'm sure it's nothing like that.
It's nothing like that. They, we do get them out for recreation in a secured area outside. They do have room to walk in their area. They're still locked up, so to speak, in that area, but they can't get out in that day area and walk around. We do have GED programs, religious services, that they come out of their cells and go to another room in that jail area, in that jail, and do the religious service or the GED programs. Again, this jail was built for 184 people, so I have like one room that we do everything in. Religious service, GED, so I have to figure out what times, what days we're going to do these programs that I have to do for the inmates there. Again, it makes it tough because we're so overcrowded and I have nowhere to put anybody.
Who are your inmates in the Madison County Detention Center in terms of the crimes that they have committed? Break down male versus female, age groups, race, etc.
I know if we have 400 people in there, well, I think we have 115 or 20 female inmates. Some of those female inmates are pregnant, on heroin, on meth. The rest are men. The age, I haven't really studied the age of the people that are incarcerated there, but it's probably going to be between 20 and 40 years of age. Again, we struggle with what we have to work with. And I've got to give credit to my officers, the job that they do to keep everything under control.
Do you know a breakdown of the crimes that have brought people into your facility?
When I took office in 2011, we had about 220 to 30 people in there. And at that time, it was pill related. That slowed down. Then you've seen the meth kick in. We got more people arrested for meth. That slowed down, then the heroin came into play. The heroin's hung around for quite some time. Now I see a little more meth picking up now, but the heroin is still with us. It hasn't died down any at all, so it's drug-related charges.
How many of the 400 are not drug-related?
Very small percentage. I'm going to say 85-90% of it is drug-related.
Wow.
Because you have that theft or that burglary where they've broken in or tried to get into something to steal something to sell to make their money to buy some heroin.
That's the reason for this conversation on this week's Eastern Standard. Doug Thomas, jailer in Madison County. And actually, let me go ahead and turn to Stephanie Raglan, who's on the phone line, for your reaction to that situation. I assume that the situation that Doug is describing in Madison County is fairly common, maybe similar to what occurs in Lexington, Fayette?
That's correct. he's right on the money.
What is the situation? Do you have any figures for us? Or I mean, I know you work with the programs at the Fayette County Detention Center, number of inmates there and overcrowding there?
Well, I don't deal specifically with the inmates as a whole. I run the men and women's substance abuse programs inside the Fayette County Detention Center. And so the day-to-day operations that I oversee are just with those individuals who are in the program. However, I can tell you that I would say 90% of those who are incarcerated for drug-related offenses, and they're there for heroin is the top, along with the methamphetamines. We've seen a rise in the synthetic drugs such as ecstasy and things of that nature. But so I would say that, you know, the problem is very much prevalent, and it's not getting any better. It's getting worse. The fentanyl is also on the rise when you're mixing the fentanyl and also the heroin together. So we're seeing a vast majority of the clients who come into our program, and that's what their drug of abuse is.
And Stephanie, you work for the Hope Center in Lexington. I know you have a variety of different programs. You work with the recovery program for women. There's somebody working with recovery for men. To what extent of your work at the Hope Center are you working? Is the focus on people who are incarcerated? There's a whole other population of people who are not incarcerated that are needing help as well, right?
And in all actuality, John, we have we service not only the homeless population. But we also service those who may be a part of drug court or the Department of Corrections that may be ordered to our process. And so the figures, the names of drugs and the level of abuse is the same as what we find in the jails. Hmm. Heroin, the fentanyl, the methamphetamines, a lot of Schedule II narcotics, that's what the drug abuse is when they come in, even to our programs that are in the community.
We're going to need to take a break in a moment here, but Stephanie, as well as Doug Thomas, when the folks are imprisoned, incarcerated because of drug-related charges, have they been convicted on usage or sales of drugs, possession, or is it other crimes, perhaps violence that resulting from that, theft that results from their need for to feed their habit? How many of these folks are actually incarcerated because of possession or direct usage? Do we know that?
I don't know about Stephanie. I don't think we know the exact number of someone that's selling it or someone that's using it or the burglary or the robbery or the murder. I don't think we know the exact numbers on that, but it's all the above.
It's all connected, though. It's all roots back to the drug abuse.
It all goes back to the drug
abuse. I agree.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. Stephanie Ragland from the Hope Center is on the line. Doug Thomas, Madison County Jailer, is here with us. Wesley Morgan, District 81 representative to the General Assembly. And we hope eventually to welcome Judge Executive for Madison County, Reagan Taylor, who had another commitment but is going to join us when he is able to do so. This is Eastern Standard. You're welcome to get on the line with your question, your comment, your personal story as we talk about this issue of jail overcrowding and the drug crisis. 800-621-8890. Email wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. That phone number, 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We are talking about jail overcrowding and the drug crisis. Our guest, Doug Thomas, Madison County Jailer. Wesley Morgan, the House District 81 representative representing the Madison County area. Stephanie Ragland from the Hope Center, and she works with the programs and recovery for women and focusing on efforts at the Fayette County Detention Center. And we're talking about the nature of this problem and solutions. And Wesley Morgan, when we met this morning, you arrived at the studio. One of the first things you said to me is you have no answers.
Well, we don't. We don't have any answers because I just turned 67 years old. And I remember just before I graduated from high school in 1967, before I left to go to college, we were told not to mess with drugs from my father, and we didn't do that. But I've watched it. When I started in college, it was mostly heroin at that time before. And then all of a sudden, then we had marijuana. We've attacked that. So then it went from heroin to the Colombian connection with cocaine. And then now here we are, 50 years later, and we're back to heroin. And we have a real problem because we can't seem to decide what it's going to take to stop this epidemic. And to give you an example, you really only have three ways that you can handle something like this. The first thing before I say that, though, I want to make everyone understand that anyone other than a manufacturer or a cultivator or an importer is a victim of this. And most of these people are incarcerated in jail right now are victims from someone else bringing something that's going to alter their life into their life and create something that they're addicted to and then cause them to violate other laws in order to obtain the money to feed that habit. But going back, basically I hold the people who import, cultivate, or manufacture responsible for it. And until we get really, really harsh with their penalties for that, I don't think we have much of a possibility of solving the problem.
What are the three options that you were about to mention?
Sometimes I hesitate saying what they are because
it's not easy,
and
a lot of people
are going to gasp when they hear some of it. But basically, you continue what you're doing, and it's not working. That's option number one.
So we have our jails full, and we're just locked people up.
And we're getting to the point to where, the judges can't even incarcerate them because they have nowhere to put them. And number two that you can do is you can legalize it and tax it and give some kind of a legal distribution system that allows the people to be taken care of from their addiction. And number three, which is the ones they're going to gasp on, is you have to make the penalties so severe because it's all about making money. This is the same thing that occurred with prohibition of alcohol. And it didn't work, and they put it then they had to repeal it. But the problem is alcohol is not the addicting thing. It is for some people. Don't get me wrong. They are people who cannot handle alcohol. But this, once you get on drugs, once you become addicted, it's almost like a smoker. Once a person starts smoking, the nicotine is so addicting they can't get off. But now, of course, I'm not trying to compare tobacco with drugs because they're so devastating. But the addiction is just overwhelming, and they find themselves in a situation where they can't get off of it, and then they'll do anything for that fix. So I look at them as victims. Anyone who has not imported it, manufactured it, or cultivated it is a victim from those people.
Stephanie Raglan of the Hope Center, reaction to what Representative Morgan has said.
Well, I think, first of all, we have to understand that, addiction doesn't separate, at least from my standpoint, alcohol from other drugs, because alcohol is a drug, along with the nicotine. And I think to lock individuals up and throw the key away is not the answer. I think, across the state of Kentucky, and I think Kentucky has done a fine job with finding ways to help those individuals who are addicted. And, a lot of times the addiction comes from not being able to deal with instances that may have happened in somebody's life. We think that individuals are homeless just because they want to be homeless, but we understand with the population that we serve here in Lexington, that when you're finding homelessness, you're also dealing with a whole lot of other issues that individual may have, from substance abuse to mental health. And so you have to treat the whole person in essence, to be able to help them to become productive members of society again. But I don't think from my standpoint, I don't think that legalizing would help. It might, it may not, but I'm not the judge or the jury on that one. I agree that there should be some tougher penalties placed on those who are selling the drugs. But I also believe that there has to be more funding sources to help with those individuals who are addicted to drugs, whether it's alcohol or other drugs. You know, gambling is also an issue that's an addiction as well. So it's what we have to take a look at. I also think that education to all those that are in legislation positions is a key. You have to be able to educate individuals on this issue of addiction, because it's not just something that you can just say, okay, you can quit anytime you want to. There has to be a formula set aside in which we have that will help that individual to abstain from using drugs, that will then therefore allow them to become productive members of society. Because most of the people that we serve, you know, they're not bad people. They just made some bad mistakes in their lives. And so we have to get rid of the misnomer that they can quit at any time that they want to, or it's just the bad drugs like the heroin and the cocaine.
All right.
We see a lot of people who are addicted to marijuana and also alcohol in our programs.
Okay, Stephanie is with the Hope Center, Stephanie Raglan, and Representative Wesley Morgan. Actually, I'm thinking one of your list of three potential options in resolving this issue, you did not mention treatment or recovery.
Well, I said they were victims, and victims need treatment. I wasn't excluding treatment, but I won't make it perfectly clear that I was not advocating legalizing it. You asked me what was the solutions, and I was just outlining there were several solutions that you stay with what you got, and or you make the penalties so severe, or you legalize.
Let me ask you, you've been at the General Assembly for one session this past year. What about the drug issue? What did you see as the legislation that would most affect this problem that you have observed? And what action did you all take this year?
Well, we passed House Bill 333, which basically put a lot more penalties on opioids and things like that, and it limited the number of days a physician could fill a prescription for fentanyl or opioids, and I was for that, even though all legislation always has unintended consequences. I had my mother died in 2014, and her spine was disintegrating, and someone who's 83 years old, they would not give pain medication too, even though her spine was disintegrating before she died, and she was in severe pain.
Well, we can't go to buy cold medications in the drugstore without.
So every time that you pass something to correct something, you create unintended consequences for it. And I'll go back to what I originally said, and in response to what the lady on the telephone said, I consider these people victims, other than those people who import, cultivate, or manufacture. Those people are the ones who are causing it. I mean, she's perfectly right. There's a lot of unintended people who got addicted just because they went out and got hurt, and some doctor gave them tons of opioids that they got addicted to. There's quite a number of cases of that.
Oh, the talk show host Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, that's correct.
Got addicted, and we would not think that he was likely to be a character out there advocating drug use.
I have been hospitalized a couple times, and they were giving me morphine. And the nurse came in with morphine. I said, I don't want it. I don't want to take any possibility that I even like this stuff. So you know, if you're fearful of being addicted to something, then that helps.
This is Eastern Standard. Our program is an interactive program. We invite listeners to react to our topic of jail overcrowding and the drug crisis. Send us an email, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKU EST, or call 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. In advance of the show, we usually run announcements asking listeners, feel free to leave us a message with your question or your comment. I want to play a brief comment from listener Lee, who called in earlier this week. I think it's a little bit repetitive of what we've heard, but perhaps there's something in there that will assist us. Lee called in a couple of days ago in response to our topic of jail overcrowding and drug abuse.
Various wars on drugs have succeeded admirably in driving people from less dangerous drugs to more dangerous drugs. In the early 70s, Richard Nixon declared war on marijuana and made it much more profitable and much safer to import cocaine. Somebody declared war on cocaine, and it became much more profitable and much safer to do crack. Then we had a war on drugs, period, and that was declared on crack, and people moved to meth, which they can make so easily that there's no point in having a war on it. People can make all they want, and they do. More recently, a war on pain pills was declared, which succeeded in moving people to heroin. The war on heroin then succeeded in moving people to fentanyl. And fentanyl is so easy to make and so incredibly powerful that it simply can't be stopped.
Listener Lee from Lexington, thank you, Lee, for calling with that comment, which is really very repetitive, actually, of what Wesley Morgan just said. You know, what next? We've kind of come full cycle back to heroin and opioid addiction, and when legislation is taken and when action is taken on one of these drugs, then another one pops
up. Well, let me assure
you, whack-a-mole.
Let me assure you that the General Assembly is very aware of this problem, and they're searching for a solution. So far, that solution hasn't been found. You know, everything that you try to do from a government standpoint is more money. One thing would help our jailer is bigger jail. But if you're not really getting to the core of the problem, then he's going to need a bigger jail than that sooner or later.
Well, so, let me ask our jailer, Doug Thomas of Madison County, what is an option within your facility for a treatment or recovery or assistance of those with drug problems? Is there any effort being made there? It sounds like there's something happening in Fayette County with the work that Stephanie's doing.
True. Again, we're a 184-bed facility, and we have over 400 people. And the jail was built in 88, 89, moved in it in 1990. I think we took about 75 or 80 people over there back then. And I think about 7 or 8 years later, we built on to that jail, made it, and to make it a 184-bed facility, and that's where we've been since the mid-90s to where we're at today, still a 184-bed facility. Our county's grown, everything grows with it, the crime rate grows, so our jail gets full. To be honest with you, I don't have the room. I don't have the space available to work. I do the best I can with our religious services, Kenny Davis, people coming into our jail to preachers teaching and preaching the GED program that we have, the AANA. I do everything that I can.
So you do have AANA?
I do.
Okay.
To make this happen inside our facility with what little bit of space I have. With that said, for me, that if our facility were to be bigger, or we were to build, or we were to build on, that we need that room, multi-purpose rooms, to get serious about working your way out of jail through rehab inside our facility.
But if your facility were expanded, you'd be adding more space for inmates and probably fill that space very quickly.
We probably would fill it very quickly. Again, our county's grown, and there are people going to be in jail, a lot of people, because there's a lot of bad people that we have to incarcerate. So, again, for me, when your county grows, you got to grow with it. And unfortunately, jails have to grow also with it. That's just the way we operate. So, again, I don't want to build any more jails. I wish we could just stop. It'd be a perfect world, but it's not.
Stephanie, I'm sorry. I know you wanted to react to what you're hearing.
I think that even with the space that you have, and I think that there is a solution to maybe help facilitate some of the issues. Is maybe if you can't have space for a program per se, you could possibly have somebody that's in the field to come in and to offer substance abuse classes to those that may be interested in getting the help. I know one of the things that we have done here in Fayette County, and we have a great working relationship with the director and also the officers at the Fayette County Detention Center, is that we have sat down and we have collaborated with the space that we have, because of course we're busting at the seams as well, and I don't know the exact number of inmates we do have, but we sat down and brainstormed as to how we could make use of the space that we have and still be able to utilize a space for substance abuse education. And currently, in the program in the jail, we utilize two sub-day rooms. And if you're familiar with the sub-day rooms, which hold, they hold 10 or 20 in each room. And so we've got 30 in our men's program, and we have 20 in our women's program that we service. And then we work with the other programs in the jail as far as spacing is concerned. But we also use the space that we have within our sub-day rooms to provide the education to our clients who have been either ordered to complete, or those that are just in jail and have a substance abuse problem and want to enter and get the help. And so, again, that's 30 men and 20 women. And we've been providing that service at the Fayette County Detention Center. Our men's program started in 2002, which the city helped us fund. And also our women's program, because there was a need to help those women who were incarcerated with substance abuse issues as well. We started the women's program in 2006.
What do we know about the results, though, of these programs?
I can tell you that our men's program, we have a success rate of about 62% of those individuals who come into our process and complete successfully complete that program.
62% do not return to the jail.
Well, I can't say that they don't. There may be some of that may return, but there may be for other offenses.
Okay, we're going to take another short break. I'm sorry, Stephanie Raglan, Doug Thomas, and Wesley Morgan will be back with our guests as we discuss jail overcrowding and the drug crisis in Kentucky, focusing on the example of Madison County, but also Stephanie working with the Fayette County Detention Center through the Hope Center. 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet, as someone has done, at wekuest. And that phone number again, 800-621-8890. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking about jail overcrowding and the drug crisis. Doug Thomas is a Madison County jailer. Wesley Morgan is House District 81 representative from Madison County. Stephanie Raglan is with the Hope Center and works with the Women's Recovery Program, as well as programs at the Fayette County Detention Center. And we're interested in your questions, your comments, your stories. Solutions. The legislators, Representative Morgan, are looking for solutions.
They are. And I'll say again that, the assistance to help people get off of their addictions, that's great. I'm all for that. But I also would increase the penalties substantially for, again, going back to importation, cultivation, and manufacture. I think the penalties need to skyrocket. Needs to be severe penalties. This is all about making money. And that's the thing. And until you take the profit incentive out of it, so it disappears. I mean, just like if we totally outlawed cigarettes right now and just done away with them, talk about the market, the people who smoke at this point would have to quit smoking because it wouldn't be there. Well, if you can stop it being manufactured, or you can stop it from being imported, smuggled in, or grown, then it's going to disappear.
But if you took tobacco off the market and made it illegal, there would be an a new industry, a new drug industry created, was there not? But tobacco, more crime as a result of what had been done there.
Tobacco is something different than drugs, because once you get that shed of that, you really don't want it anymore.
By the way, we did have a tweet from a listener. Ms. Democrat is what she identifies on Twitter. She poses, doesn't alcohol start addiction to most drugs? Maybe we toss that to Stephanie. The comments about connection between alcohol and more serious drugs. Someone made a comment about addiction to marijuana. Is that a thing? Is that really the case that we've heard for years? Representative Morgan and I, we grew up during the same generation, and we've heard that marijuana is not addictive. Stephanie, your comments to those, your reaction to those?
Okay, to the first question, let me say that I really can't say that alcohol is the precursor to the use of other drugs. I will tell you, with alcohol being socially accepted, people use alcohol quite frequently. However, we have served many clients, both male and female, who alcohol was not the issue for them.
Not their entry drug. Huh? Mm.
Yes. And then to also answer the question about marijuana, we have had several instances of individuals who are addicted to marijuana.
I
will tell you, too, I want to go back to the question, talk about the penalty. I want to address that just for a second. I do agree with the stiffer penalties. But I also know, too, that with House Bill 143 passing, which created more substance abuse beds in the community, you know, we have Recovery Kentucky programs across the state that house 100 individuals who are coming from Department of Correction facilities into the community programs. And there's one right there in Richmond, Kentucky, Liberty Place, that houses 100 women who are recovering from substance abuse. And so we have those, at least 14 of those across the state, including the Hope Center here in Lexington for both men and women, and also the Healing Place, which is both women and men, in Louisville, Kentucky.
One more quick comment from Representative Morgan that I need to get to some listeners here.
I actually have experience when I was going to college with people, with young people like myself, when I first started in college, that actually started on marijuana, and they graduated to harder drugs. I've actually seen that. Now, I didn't deal in any drugs at all, period. But I had close friends, some of them who are not living today, that mm-hmm. went from marijuana to harder drugs.
We're talking about jail overcrowding and the drug crisis on this week's Eastern Standard. Let's see. I believe we have a number of callers on the line. Do we still have a caller on line 4? I'm looking to Brian Bartlett, our technical director. And it was Ed from Versailles was on line 4 at one point. Ed, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for being patient.
I think it's a great subject. I'm glad you're talking about it. But the situation in Madison County, what is the population of Madison County?
It's about 88,000.
Hello? It's getting close to 90,000.
Yeah. Okay, so you have 0.5% of your population in the jail. But we talk about the drug problem in America, about the Madison County jail and as a bunch of individual items, when in fact it's a huge, gigantic problem that we need to address, and it probably is the most expensive problem in America, and neither one of our recent political candidates really talked about it. Bernie Sanders talked about the amazing expense of the prison incarceration, but the previous hour they were talking about unemployment in America and employing Americans. And one of the reasons so many people in America don't have a job is because they can't pass a drug test. But even if they could pass a drug test, they wouldn't show up 5 days in a row because of their addiction. And the huge cost that we have in our healthcare system because of the drugs usage. And the jailer talked about the number of addicted women who are pregnant. Many of those children will have lifelong problems due to their mother's addiction, and the cost to our society must be huge, and I just find it amazing that we talk about it as individual, like the overcrowding problem in Madison County, and I understand how critical that is. I really do. But that is a symptom of a much bigger problem that is really destroying the fabric of our society.
So, Ed, the answer...
I'm an old guy.
What is the answer,
Ed? We've been fighting this war for 40 years, and it's not working.
So what is the answer?
We need to come up with some of the solutions like your legislator's talking about to really try to stop the problem.
Ed, thank you.
Thank you for letting me make a comment.
Really appreciate it, and thank you for being patient and hanging on the line with us, Ed from Versailles. This is Eastern Standard. We're talking jail overcrowding and the drug crisis, focusing specifically on Madison County just because it's an example of where a lot of the problem is very evident. And joining us now is the judge executive for Madison County, I assume. We've never met before, but I assume this is Reagan Taylor, who's joined us in the studio. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Doug has been representing Madison County, in my opinion, pretty well. Can we get your comments about this whole situation of jail overcrowding and any other angles, in which you have not been hearing the program because you had another commitment, but what are those in managing the government of Madison County, what solutions are being proposed?
Right now, we've really looked at it from a 50,000-foot view of trying to figure out what the root of the issue is with the overcrowding. And obviously, the numbers and the statistics show that it's the drug epidemic. There's no question when you look at the numbers of what's the cause of it. We're really taking a more of a healing approach to it right now, trying to see if we can make something work. It's a little outside the box. There's one thing that's factual in all this information is that incarcerating is not working. Those are proven statistical numbers that it's not working. It hasn't been working. If it was working, we wouldn't have the 75% recidivism rates. We wouldn't have our circuit court indictments going from 107 in 1996 to its expected in 2017 to be over 1,000. That's a pretty big increase. And so we're trying to come up with a solution that is solution-oriented and not just kicking the can down the road for the future.
We had this is Reagan Taylor, judge executive from Madison County, joining us as we discuss this issue. I want to acknowledge an email from Andrew in Lexington. And Andrew writes, I am aware from a recent frontline on PBS about some states and counties that are attempting to expand the use of community supervision to reduce the amount of persons incarcerated. The intervention did not seem to reduce recidivism, according to Frontline, but the concept seems valid. Is Kentucky considering increasing resources for community supervision? And if so, what steps are being taken to improve the results of the programs? Any legislative proposals out there, or anything you're aware of, for instance?
I kind of agree with a county judge. But don't we have an empty federal prison in Beattyville? I believe we do. I don't know why we couldn't convert that to some kind of a rehab sanatorium, someplace where you could send these people obviously kept there, but it wouldn't be really like jail. It would be they're going through a program to help them dry out and help them understand that to get off the drugs. That shouldn't cost very much since the facility's already there. It's just a matter of hiring the personnel and starting sending the people in for treatment.
What do we know about the cost of treatment and rehab versus the cost of incarceration and the current situation where, as you mentioned earlier, Representative Morgan, we can continue doing what we're doing, which isn't working. What's that costing, and what would rehab and treatment cost?
I think our judge can answer that question. He's been studying that quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the cost of rehabbing is more expensive than incarcerating, on a per day with the counselors and all the operating costs of a rehab facility. But when you look at it for long term, I mean, there's a return on investment. In my opinion, and there's the way that all levels of government should look at it, is that there's a return on investment from healing versus just housing. And what I mean by that is that you are healing these people, you're educating these people, you're giving them the tools that they need to be successful and to become a successful citizen of society and also to become a taxpayer. Right now, 85% recidivism rate, They're not learning anything. Doug's just having to continue to keep the door open and just let them revolve in and out, in and out, in and out.
Probably recognizing some of them when they return.
Most all of them.
And it's generational too, isn't it, Doug?
It is.
You've had probably grandparents and parents and grandkids.
Yeah, we have, and we still are.
At the same time. So we're really taking, and I want to say something too from a standpoint of what funding is available out there, whether it's state funding or federal funding, whether it's Medicaid, Medicare, depending on your age, is that, you know, there is funding out there for the first phases of the rehab, the first 60 days, 90 days, different percentages depending on where you are in that phase. But there really is nothing for a third phase or a fourth phase. And we're really looking at our ideas is using the new P3 legislation to as a government entity, maybe that we can come up with that gap funding that is needed for a soup to nuts approach.
P3 legislation, what is that?
That's a public-private partnership. And so it allows government and universities, EKU universities, they've been able to do it for quite some time. But now local governments are allowed to do it, thanks to some legislation that got approved last
session. This is state
session,
legislation.
Mm-hmm. Yep, state legislation. And so it allows a government entity like ourselves to partner with a private entity to be an operator in this facility. And so our solution to this, or our idea, is to not only detox them, give them the mental healing they need, but also it go into another phase that potentially goes all the way into job placement, and it's successful paying jobs. It's jobs that are going to help these people to be successful and to really put hope back in their life.
Speaking of hope, from the Hope Center in Lexington, Stephanie Ragland mm-hmm. has been on the line with us. And Stephanie, we talk about this issue of treatment and rehab versus incarceration. Who pays for what you do? Who pays for what the Hope Center does and your services in the Fayette County Detention Center? Are you there, Stephanie? Did we lose Stephanie?
In the court? No, I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry.
I had you on mute.
No, that's okay.
The city pays for the programs in the Fayette County Detention Center, but for our programs on the outside, we have a variety of income sources through grant. We write a lot of grants. We have contracts, again, with the Department of Corrections, and also we do a partnership with the Fayette County Drug Court. And then we have a great funding source through our in-kind donations and also our donors. And so we do a lot of fundraising throughout the year to help to meet the need of the clients that we serve. But I want to just talk about, too, the extra components after you do the rehabilitation, because some clients need to be habilitated and then others need to be rehabilitated. However, I think one of the major issues that we face is that when you have a client that has someone who has a felony conviction, that felony conviction seems to follow them for the rest of their life. Sure. And so, you know, we've had the issue even in Fayette County with the Banda Box that cannot get passed. And individuals won't hire if they have a felony. However, if the felon is a nonviolent offense, then I think if we could get some form of legislation passed to ban the box and to allow these individuals who have gotten have committed a crime because of their addiction, and it's not a violent crime, and then allow that individual to, and that individual has been rehabilitated and is working in the community, because jobs are an issue. And if you can't get a job and you can't find housing because of a felony conviction that may be nonviolent, then that's when your recidivism rate continues to grow, because they go back to what they know how to do to provide for their family and their children, because people won't take a chance on them. And so, you know, there has to be some form of reentry for these individuals, that when they do get out, that they don't go back into the same places, the same neighborhoods, and same environments that they left. Because if they do and they can't find a job, then they go, again, they revert back
the cycle
to what they know best.
Stephanie Ragland is with the Hope Center in Lexington in Fayette County. And we are running out of time, so let me ask Reagan Taylor, judge executive from Madison County, what do we see on the horizon? What's going to happen in this area, which might become a model? Right now, Madison County is at the center. People see as an example of the core of the problem of overcrowding. What is Madison County going to do and become an example for solving the problem?
Well, we'll hope to know the answer to that in about another month and a half.
Really?
We put an RFP out in March. Bids were due July the 7th of this year. We had 10 different potential operators. Our review team is meeting on August the 10th to start the first review process of these bids and to then start our interview process to see if we can find that partner that we can really come up and create a program model that is a soup-to-nuts approach and that will be successful and really help Madison County.
I'm hoping you're going to stay in touch with us and let us know as that occurs so we can
absolutely. I'd say this would be something, if you don't know about this, that you're living in a cave somewhere. One last comment I do want to make that we're not just going to fix this drug epidemic with intervention. There's also going to have to be a focus on prevention as well. One of the things that we do have a group that's working with, along with the school system, along with all of our law enforcement and all three governments in Madison County, to really put an emphasis on prevention as well and starting a program in the school system, partnering with Berea Community and as well as the Madison County school system.
Reagan Taylor, judge executive for Madison County, thank you for being with us
on
Eastern Standard. Thank you, Stephanie Ragland with the Hope Center in Lexington and Fayette County. Thank you, Wesley Morgan, House District 81 representative. And thank you, Doug Thomas, Madison County jailer. Again, stay in touch. Let us know how things are going in terms of the jail overcrowding in Madison County. Eastern Standard is a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Our producers for the program are Zach Redding, Devonna Gaines, and Julia Dake. Our technical director, Brian Bartlett. This program will be available online as a podcast or for online listening at weku.fm. And we'll repeat Sunday evening at 6 on 88.9 WEKU. Let us know what you think, your reactions, your comments for the program, wekustandard@gmail.com, or give us a call, 859-622-1657, and leave a message. For WEKU and Eastern Standard, I'm John Hingsbergen. Thank you for tuning in.